This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just delight in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. Thank you for tuning in to this week. Man, a lot's changed here this past week. I've had a really great turkey season so far. A lot of exciting things have happened. And I'll share a couple turkey stories here with you. So I was fortunate enough that the first week of the season on Tuesday, I was able to fill one of my tags. And it was a very, very special hunt. So my son Lucas is 5 years old. And I promised him when he turned 5, if he wanted to go hunting with dad, I would take him. And he's been asking about going turkey hunting. So it would have been Tuesday, the first week. We had a kindergarten orientation screening type thing for him. He's going to kindergarten this fall. I can't believe I'm saying that I have a child that's going to be going to school for the first time. It's mind-boggling, and it's exciting. But that was going to be at about 10:30 in the morning. So I'd purposely set my work schedule up that I wanted to be at that. I wanted to be present at Lucas's thing for kindergarten. I wanted to make sure that I knew what was going on and what to prepare my son for leading into, if there was things that teachers would share with us and I could learn and be proactive. So with that in mind, I'd said to my wife, I said, what do you think about getting up in the morning and I take Lucas turkey hunting with me? There was a spot local that I could go turkey hunting, and it was conducive for kids, right? There's blinds there, and you know, you could, you know, conceal his movements and he could have a grand old time. And I figured whenever he gets enough, we'll just leave. So we go to this place, and Tuesday morning was, it was raining. It was not pouring, but it was raining. It was foggy. It was not a fun day, but I tried to bring some snacks and stuff and, you know, make it as fun as we could. And I just so happened to go with a guy from church, my friend Earl, who I've had on the podcast before. And we had a miscommunication, and I didn't realize he was going to be there. So we're literally walking to the place that we were going to go hunting, and I see his truck parked there. And I called him. I said, "Hey," I said, "are you going here?" He said, "Yeah." He goes, "Just join me." He goes, "Just come sit with me." So, well, thank you. So the three of us sat in the blind together. And as it's breaking daylight, you know, we heard a distant gobble, and it sounded so faint I couldn't even tell where it was. And come to find out, I think it sounded that faint just because it was so foggy and dense, and the leaf material and everything else. I think the turkey was a heck of a lot closer than we realized. But, you know, Lucas is, you know, being a kid, you know, he's rammy, he's wanting to call, he wanting to do this, wanting to do that, and we're having a fun time. And right at like 6:30, a turkey flies directly into the field 30 yards away, and it's looking at the decoys, and it's a Jake. It's got, you know, short stubby beard, and he's going, Dad, are you gonna shoot it? And I said, well, I said, do you want me to? I will. Do you want me to shoot it? Yeah, shoot it. I said, it's a small one. It's not very big. Oh, let's wait for a bigger one. I said, are you sure, buddy? Yeah, let's wait for a bigger one. So this Jake was a little bit nervous, didn't want to come into the decoys, but he still hung around. And he actually gobbled on his own in the food plot. And he was kind of going into a half strut and kind of, you know, kind of feeling it a little bit. And Lucas goes, I want to call to him. So he gets my box call, right? And he's making little sounds on it. And they actually didn't sound too bad. He was getting the turkey to gobble and was having so much fun. We're just laughing and having a good hi-ho time. And at one point, Lucas goes, Dad, there's another one. And neither Earl or I saw this other gobbler at first. But I looked out in the food plot, and I'm like, yeah, there is another gobbler. I'm like, that's bigger. And I looked in my binoculars, and it was another Jake, but it had a longer beard. It was actually kind of hanging. And we were like, shoot that one. So I shot it, and it was like a big old mega Jake or something. It had like a 6 1/4-inch beard. We were thrilled. I mean, Lucas had a blast. It was fun. It was just a cool experience, and I was so grateful to have that with him. It wasn't really a great turkey hunting morning. We didn't hear a lot of gobbles. There wasn't a lot of turkey action. We just happened to be at the right place at the right time, and you know, Dad got to fill a tag with Lucas, and he got to see a turkey and see a turkey hunt. Now he's going to be spoiled. He's going to think they all go like that, which Lord knows they don't. But it was my first turkey. I shot it with a 28-gauge over-under. And, you know, I think I've talked about this a couple times. I'm on the journey to try to kill a turkey with every gauge shotgun. So last year I used my 20-gauge, killed some birds. I've killed them with a 12-gauge in the past. That's what I hunted with every year up until last year. So this year I borrowed a family's gun, had an over-under CV or CZ 28-gauge, right? And that gun was phenomenal. I mean, I loved how light it was. The pattern with TSS was absolutely phenomenal. I probably could have killed a bird to 50 yards with that TSS pattern, no problem, and was successful. So now I've switched, and I'm using a 16-gauge. And to make it a little more special to me, I'm doing it with my great-grandfather's shotgun. So my great-grandfather had 3 Stevens double-barrel side-by-side shotguns. One was a 12-gauge, one was a 16-gauge, and one is a 410. So I made my mind up, I'm going to try to do this with his 16-gauge, and if I'm fortunate enough to ever harvest one with it, the next gun I'm going to take is his side-by-side 410 shotgun. So I had a really hard time finding loads for that 16-gauge. I couldn't find turkey loads. And my uncle gave me some high brass number 5s and high brass number 6s, and that's what I took in the beginning. And I patterned it, and I was not going to shoot past 30 yards if I could help it. It was just not a real tight, constricted pattern. It was a little far for that gun. Using the left barrel was the tighter choke, and it was still tougher. And so I take this gun out, right? So I didn't hunt Wednesday. Thursday morning was beautiful the first week. And I went to a property that is new to me. I haven't really hunted it much. And when I got there, right about 20 after 5, I heard a bird gobbling in the distance on a neighbor's property. So I worked my way back and got to a spot where I thought was a good setup in the back corner of the property. I sat there till 7 o'clock. I called to him a few times, but he was way off, and he answered me, but he flew down and, you know, did what turkeys do. They flew down, probably had some hens and weren't talking. And I thought about 7 o'clock, I heard another turkey back towards my car. So I packed my stuff up, worked my way back towards the vehicle, hunted my way down, and it was cool because I got to see a little bit more of the property the way I accessed it, which was good. And it's about 7:15. I'm down at the other corner of the property. I'm at my last point where I'm like, okay, last series of calls. If I get nothing to answer, I'm going down to my car and I'm going to work. But if I get one to answer, I'm going to play with it. I got a little bit of flexibility in my schedule and I got some time. And case in point, I just reminded myself why I carry all these calls. Sometimes I think, why in the heck do I carry all these different turkey calls? I end up gravitating towards the same one all the time. But I used my mouth call, no answers. I used a slate call, no answers. And I switched over to that box call, and pow, one gobbled. And he was gobbling right back where I was earlier this morning. It was almost like the bird left loose and was cutting across the property. So I thought, well, up after him I go. And by the time I got up in that general area, the bird walked all the way across the property from one neighbor's property on the east side. He walked directly across the property onto the property on the west side. And the first setup I made on him, I made because I didn't know how close I wanted to get to him. I couldn't exactly tell where he was. I was afraid he'd see me. But I made this setup, heard him gobbling. He was gobbling on his own a lot. He did answer me. I was calling soft, but I put a soft call with the box call. He answered me, and I got set and waited. A couple minutes go by, and he gobbled on his own. It sounded like he was farther away. So I finally made a decision. I think I can move a little closer to this turkey. And I got into a better setup. There was a hollow running north and south on this property. I got towards the top of this hollow, and it looked like a better place to set up. And I set up right on the transition of these pine trees that had some thicker underbrush. And then out in front of me was more open hardwoods and ferns and stuff like that. And I'm like, man, this looks like a setup way better, like I could possibly call this turkey in. Now, as I was sitting there, I thought to myself, but you know, I think it's going to get really hard to get this turkey to get into this gun's effective range, because he's probably going to come in and get to a certain distance and pick his head up and look for that hen. And if he doesn't see her, he's going to get nervous. And I did have a decoy with me. Hindsight being 20/20, maybe I should have put it out. But I was so afraid to go any farther that he would see me, because I was about 150 yards or less from this turkey. He was gobbling on his own. It was perfect that I could hear where he was at and get situated. So I make my set. First call I made with my box call, because that's what I had got him to respond on at first. And he, just a real light yelp, he answered me. I put the gun on my knee and was aiming down. A couple minutes go by, and he gobbled on his own, basically the same spot, hadn't moved. So I reached over in the leaves, and I started scratching in the leaves. And he gobbled to that, and I thought, man, that is a good sign. He's interested. And I waited a little bit, and I put my mouth call in, and I didn't do anything real loud. I just did one whine, and it was just like, and he double gobbled to it, like he went nuts. And I was like, man, that is a good sign. I could see this. And keep in mind, this bird is gobbling to crows and just on his own. And now, after that double gobble, he went silent. And I thought, he's coming. There's only one reason he'd do that. He's coming. Sure enough, I see a bobbinhead coming across the hollow at one point, and he gobbled on his own, and he was right there. And I see him coming towards me. He's slightly above me. It's a fairly flat bench, but he's on the top side of the bench working his way in. He's strutting his way in, gobbling on his own. It was textbook. I mean, it was everything you would dream of in the setup, the working on the bird, bringing him in. And he did exactly what I thought would happen. He got to about 40 yards, and he stood there. And then he came out of strut, and he was just looking. And this turkey, I'm telling you, he was out of strut in the wide open with his head sticking up. And I'm sitting there killing myself like, any other normal turkey gun I would take, and this thing is dead. I mean, I'd be done. I would shoot, and he'd be done. And he started getting nervous, and I knew he wasn't going to come close. So then he kind of turned, and he went back into strut, but he started working right to left. And I knew it was one of those, it was now or never kind of deal. Now, keep in mind, I had been very thought-provoked, very disciplined with approaching this turkey. And I think I made a lot of really good decisions. But I was a little kid in a candy store, and I let my excitement get the absolute best of me. And I did one of the stupidest things I could possibly do. And I wasn't going to share this, but I feel like it is because I got to be real. He stepped out, and he came a touch closer, but he was still probably right around 40 yards. And I had the evil voices in my head saying, you just got to try it. It's now or never. Just shoot. Just shoot. You might get him. You might get him. Just shoot it. And I let my excitement get the best of me, and I shot, and I missed him. And he took off flying and ran away like nothing happened. And after that, my heart sank. I was so disgusted with myself. Cussed myself out like, Mitchell, you dumb idiot. You know better. You knew that gun's effective range, and you told yourself you can't kill him there. But why did you try? And I don't have an excuse other than I was impatient, foolish, and just thought I had to try it. I had to force something. So now the ramifications are for that, or that turkey might be a little bit harder for me to get on. It might be a little harder to call. Maybe I don't get another opportunity. Maybe I miss it. And I'm not upset that I didn't get the turkey. I could care less about that. I was more upset with myself that I made such a bad decision in the heat of the moment. You know, I'd done well up until that point, but I got so freaking excited. My heart was pounding. I was shaking. And I just wanted it so bad, and I succumbed to that pressure and made a bad decision. And I share that with you because it happens. I got to be real, and you learn from it. You know, that's a tough situation. And I feel like, you know, as you grow and you learn, stuff like that happens. But all in all, really, really good week. You know, my opening day was kind of on the slower side. You know, got to hear some birds, hunted till noon, but didn't really get to work anything. And then Saturday, the end of the first week on this past Saturday, I was so excited because that front came through on Friday. It was rainy and miserable, and Saturday was a bluebird, nice day, and I thought for sure, you know, there'd be turkeys hunting. I hunted another new property that I didn't get to hunt before, but I knew there was birds on, and all we heard was two shock gobbles to geese, and I could not get anything to work, and I couldn't buy a turkey that day. But hey, it's been an exciting season so far, and I'm looking forward to the rest of it. So, you know, switching gears and going into this week's episode, I got Kevin Creeley from the Mid-Atlantic Outdoors podcast on Sportsman's Empire. And we're going to have a turkey hunting conversation because, A, Kevin is ate up hunting turkeys. He goes all over the place hunting them, and he's got a lot of knowledge. He's a driven turkey hunter. And, you know, the preface for this episode is the fact that, you know, turkey season, opening week, everybody's fired up. You know, you're expecting turkeys to come running down your gun barrel, do what they're supposed to do, shoot them in the face, and life is good. But then after that week one of pressure and everything gets on, and week two happens and things start to slow down, the behavior changes, and a lot of people will hang it up at that point. And the point of this episode was talking about some of the things that you do to try to combat that. You do to try to make it fun. Kevin has his own philosophy. Mitchell has his own philosophy, and there's a lot of things. But the premise of this episode is discussing don't quit and how do we go about approaching different aspects of the season and trying to be successful amidst different parts of the season. And that's going to be the foundation for this episode. I think it's going to be a perfect one to keep you guys going, keep me going, keep fresh thoughts, good, positive thoughts going in your mind as we go into the later part of turkey season. The best is yet to come, in my opinion, and I'm looking forward to it. So let's dive into this week's episode. Quick commercial break for our partners. Thankful to have them. They're great partners, and we love that they support us and we support them. So Radix Hunting. Guys, if you are looking to invest in quality blinds, check out the Monarch Series blinds from Radix Hunting. They have a ton of other gear options out there. Trail cameras. I love using my M-Core cell cameras right now. They're on the Scout Tech app. They're simple to use, clear images. Love everything about those. Their trail cameras, tree stand gear, stick and pick camera accessories, everything from Radix. When I think of Radix, it's made with quality in mind and brought to market for people like you and I that work hard. So check that out. Huntworth gear. I have been using the past few years the Sheldon hoodie and Durham pants during turkey season. And let me just say, complete comfort. I really love the built-in head net with that hoodie. It makes life easy. It's comfortable, and the pants are extremely comfortable too. Easy mobility, cargo pant pockets on the side, which I really like for putting stuff like your phone and everything else in, and having room to work around your chest if you've got a turkey vest or a backpack or a fanny pack or something like that. I've really enjoyed that. But you can go on to huntworthgear.com, and you can build a system by season. I've been using the Disruption pattern. They got a couple other really cool camo patterns, so check out Huntworth Gear. And lastly, Little Mountain Outfitters. Guys, Little Mountain Outfitters is an archery hunting shop in Richland, Pennsylvania, that has a ton of archery hunting and hunting gear in general that is at your disposal. They got a great setup for different saddle gear, and they're knowledgeable archers. Now, if you're not local to that area, and that's not a shop that you can go to on the regular, check out their website, littlemountainoutfitters.com, and much of what they have in store, you can purchase online. Check out the inventory they have, and if you use the code WOODSMAN10 at checkout, you can save 10% on your purchase. Check out littlemountainoutfitters.com, and again, use the code WOODSMAN10 on your next purchase there. All right, let's dive into this episode with Kevin.
Attention archers, would you like to be part of the world's oldest gathering of bow hunters? Then mark your calendars for the annual Pennsylvania Bow Hunters Festival. This annual three-day event is held at the Sullivan County Fairgrounds in Forksville, Pennsylvania, which has been going on since 1957. It's a family-friendly event allowing participants to engage in 10 different archery shooting areas, including 3D, moving small game targets, a timed clay pigeon shoot, a steel boar, and the renowned Forksville running deer target. There's also a ton of food, fellowship, and entertainment to be made. The 2025 festival is scheduled for September 19th to the 21st, with daily hours running 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. This event is organized by a nonprofit committee, and all proceeds support local needs, including youth groups, volunteer fire and ambulance companies, and more. Visit their website at www.pabowhunters.com for more information, and we hope to see you there this year.
All right, joining us on this week's show, I have another Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network host. Finally getting to have him on my show, Mr. Kevin Creeley from the Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks, buddy. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm living the dream. You know, it's been an interesting journey this spring. As my kids are growing older and they're getting into different activities, I'm learning how time management works and other aspects of life. So that's been really fun. And, you know, off air, you were talking about all the chaos that goes on in your life at this point between work and play. And isn't it a fun journey in the springtime?
Oh, no doubt, man. So I take a huge vacation in the spring. Excuse me. And it just came to an end not too long ago. I usually format my vacation around when the southeastern states open, Alabama and Georgia, and I'll start down there, and then I'll move up to Virginia's opener, and then I'm usually off for about a week and some change through Virginia's opener. So that's about usually like March 31 through April 20th. Is about like when I take vacation. And then I have another 5 days of vacation coming up soon, and I'll be headed to the Northeast. I have not been to the Northeast yet this year. This time last year, I was in the Northeast on opening day, which I don't know about y'all in Pennsylvania, but where I hunt in New York, it was May 1.
Yep.
So
May 1, May 1 always is the starter for New York, regardless of the day. Pennsylvania, it's always the first Saturday closest okay. to May 1. So this year we started on May 3rd.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of how we do it in Virginia, first Saturday. I like the New York May 1 concrete opener thing. For guys like myself who take vacation in the spring, it's great. For guys that work a job that don't get a lot of vacation, that can only hunt weekends, it probably takes them off because they probably get a lot of Wednesday opening days or Mondays or something random, you know, and they miss a whole week, and that's got to be a bummer. But
so I'm not somebody who has hunted a ton of different states for turkeys. You know, I've hunted pretty much Virginia and Pennsylvania and Maryland are the three states that I've hunted in my lifetime for turkey. So I don't have a very well-rounded experience, but you know, you talk about hunting turkeys the end of March through April, and now you're talking about, you know, what's across the country figured as the late season, but really it's mm-hmm. the early season for us. We're just getting started.
Right.
So when you go across the eastern half of the country and work your way south to north, do you see that as you go in latitude that the turkeys kind of behave like it's delayed farther north, and they act the same in maybe the first week of May in the northeast that they did the first week of April in the south? Or do you see the turkey behavior that you went in your hunting experience where it is a different ball game? You're talking about the northeast and hunting in May.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, May 1 in New York looks like what March 15th looks like in Alabama, 100%. I'll also say that in my limited experience, and this might aggravate some people, but this is my experience, so I'm going to tell you what I've experienced. The difficulty decreases as you go north, like as far as like harvesting a turkey. Mm-hmm. From Alabama up to New York, it just gets increasingly easier to kill a turkey. Granted, take that with a grain of salt, what I just said, because I hunt public land in Alabama and Georgia, and I hunt private land in Virginia and New York. I do also hunt public land in Virginia, but in New York, I've only hunted private land. So I don't have the public land piece of the sample size of that experiment to give a real solid answer. But yeah, as far as the breeding activity and responsiveness of toms and stuff, I think they're pretty active all spring. And I think the decline in what we consider quote-unquote breeding activity is probably more induced by pressure, you know. Like, we're like, oh, they must be done for the year. I don't think they are. I think there's just been so much pressure by mid-May in, for example, Virginia, that we're not seeing as many toms strutting in open fields, mm-hmm. hearing as much gobbling activity on the ground. I'm sure they're still just as interested in breeding as they were on March 28th. But they've had so much hunting pressure, they're just not as obvious about it, if that makes sense.
100%. So while we talk about making statements that might ruffle some people's feathers, I'm going to make one. So I just was talking about this with a friend of mine on the phone the other day, and this is the first time I'm going to say this on the podcast. And I'm going to sound arrogant saying this, and I don't mean that there's context. But when you, for me personally, when I think about all the big game species that I've hunted, which isn't a long laundry list, you know, I'm hunting Pennsylvania for the most part and you know, the Northeast, which is going to be deer, bear, and turkeys. And I have had the pleasure to go out and hunt elk out in the West. You know, of all the big game species, in my opinion, I think turkey hunting is the easiest big game species. Now, when I say that, do they make a fool of me repeatedly? 100%. Do they respond terribly to hunting pressure and make the challenge yeah. of the hunt itself difficult and sometimes yeah. almost seemingly impossible to connect when you've got the pressure aspect? Absolutely. But if you just take the game species itself and their behavior in the breeding seasons, I just feel like turkey hunting, there's a lot of people with deer hunting that, you know, they'll talk about, hey, you don't have to hunt more, you have to hunt smarter. You know, you have to look for these certain things and wind right. and you approach it. You don't have to hunt as much if you just hunt smarter. There's a little bit of carryover into that in turkey hunting, from my opinion, but at the same time, I feel turkey hunting, if you just hang in there and put more time in, you're eventually going to strike up a bird that wants to play the dance and you're going to kill him. I think it's more of a time game and a time commitment with turkey hunting sometimes than it is with deer. Is anything I'm saying resonate with you, or am I completely out in left field in your opinion?
I'll just tell you my opinion. So if you were to put, like, which is it easier to harvest, a mature longbeard tom turkey or a mature buck, mature whitetail buck. I'm going to say the mature whitetail buck is probably harder to kill. But to kill a deer is significantly easier than to kill my opinion. Like, if someone were to come to me who's has zero hunting experience and it's like, hey, I want to get into hunting, what's the easiest thing to do? I can take you to a spot and you're going to kill a doe as long as you can shoot straight. You know what I mean? Like, absolutely, you're going to kill one. If you just sit there, be quiet, sit where I tell you to sit, don't move, and then shoot straight, you're going to kill a doe. It cannot be that way with turkeys sometimes.
Correct.
They don't just frequent an area. Sometimes they do. There's some private farms where they will frequent a low spot in the back corner of a field where you can, you know, there's some spots on some farms where if you just sit there long enough, you're going to kill one, you know? Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. I'll say, like, it really just depends on your sample size, right? Like, if you're hunting a chunk of public ground and trying to call up an eastern wild turkey with no decoys and nothing but a mouth call and woodsmanship, like, you're going to put in some years before you see it happen.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? I guess the same could be said about, like, going and trying to kill a mature whitetail, though. So it really just, man, I don't know. That's a tough conversation to have, you know.
It is, because there's so many clauses and caveats.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of luck involved, too. I mean, let's be honest.
I'd rather be lucky than good.
Yeah, I'm sure you've killed a couple big bucks where you're just like, didn't see that coming. You know what I mean? Where you just went to set up for a kind of whatever hunt and then just end up killing one of the bigger bucks of your life. And you're going to end up having turkey hunts like that if you turkey hunt long enough. Now, I will 100% agree with what you said about, like, if you just keep putting in the time, eventually you're going to find the right one, turkey hunting. And it can be I think it can be much more mentally draining, turkey hunting. The turkey hunting season, for most people, is about a month long, you know. Where the deer season, like, for example, in Virginia, is freakishly long. It's from early October through early January. It's extremely, we have a very long deer season.
Yes.
So it's easy to get burned out in that long of a deer season because you're hunting for like 4 months straight, you know? But turkey hunting, you get about a month. You can get burned out in 2 weeks turkey hunting because you're covering way more ground than you are deer hunting typically with most people's hunting styles, turkey hunting versus deer hunting. You're covering way more ground turkey hunting. And I just think that mental aspect of walking and calling and glassing and not seeing anything, hearing any responses, can burn you out way quicker than sitting in a tree stand not seeing deer can, in my opinion.
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
Dreaming of owning a hunting property, small farm, or remote homestead? Or maybe it's time to sell and move on to your next adventure. Whatever your dream is, Steve Choco and Base Camp Country Real Estate can make it happen. Base Camp Country Real Estate land professional Steve Choco is dedicated to providing unparalleled service in the land real estate market. With national advertising power that turns for sale into sold fast, visit us online at chocoforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510. Again, 814-360-4510.
Now, one thing that I have come to learn over time with turkeys is, and I guess I haven't learned this, I've just noticed that they flip like a light switch compared to anything. So, perfect example, this morning I hunted at a property that has birds on it and has good sign. I heard birds in preseason. I was excited to hunt it. This morning we go there and I tried locator calls. I couldn't get one to answer. I called turkey calls. I couldn't get one to answer. But a bird, you know, did a shock gobble when a group of geese flew over. And he gobbled twice, and that was all he did. But he was so
non-responsive. And I have seen that so many times at certain points in the year. Like, and a lot of time it's the first, you know, first 2 weeks of the season. You're hunting hard, you're excited, and they just don't want to cooperate for you every now and then. And then all of a sudden you go into a few weeks later and go to the same spot, and it's like they just flipped a switch. And they were feeling the mood, and they're gobbling their brains out, and they're responsive to calls. And I think that's where I go back to, if you just stick with it and don't give up, they're still there. They're just, I just think they're finicky creatures. I don't know how to describe it any other way than that.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is, a lot of people fail to realize, like, they think, okay, it's opening day, like, turkeys should be going crazy, like, gobble their brains out, come to sprint into a call or whatever. Well, if you're like a fairly well-versed whitetail hunter, you know there's stages to the rut. You know, some people consider it like, oh, this is the seeking phase, the chasing phase, the lockdown phase, whatever you want to call it with the whitetails. Longbeards have a similar timeline with their breeding cycle. And in the early, early season, typically, they have large flocks of hens. And they've got so many hens that they don't really need to gobble on the ground a ton. And so a lot of people will experience that. Depending on what your definition of early season is and what part of the world you're in, whatever that part of the season is where the turkeys have a multitude of hens to work with, they're going to gobble a lot on the limb because there's a ton of competition because there's so many hens readily available to be bred. But then once they hit the ground and they get with these hens, they don't really have a ton of reason to announce their presence across a farm, you know, because they have all these hens. Now, as these hens progress and start to go towards the nest, you can hunt the same farm 5 days in a row and not hear a single gobble. And then one day get there, like you said, and it's lights out. There's three birds firing off on the limb, and then they hit the ground, and they're firing off on the ground, and everything's sideways. And you're like, what in the world happened? And I think, and granted, I'm not a biologist or anything. It takes with a grain of salt. This is all just based off of my experience. I think a lot of it has to do with when those hens go to nest, you know. The hens go to nest, but the tom's not done breeding. Really similar to whitetails, where you can hunt a farm on the same pinch point you hunted 2 weeks ago and you didn't even see a single spike buck come through. And then you go hunt it one day and get the right wind and it's the right phase of the breeding cycle and there's a hot doe in the area or whatever, and you see seven bucks that you've never seen before. You know what I mean? I think it's probably pretty similar to where, like, you just catch it in the right phase of the breeding cycle and you happen to be hunting that day and the conditions are good, and then boom, like, turkeys are fired up, you know?
So let's talk about conditions a little bit. So that's one of the things that I'm struggling to form an opinion about, because there's, you know, I've had successful turkey hunts in rain, beautiful high pressure bluebird days. I've had days where I just think it's got to be on fire. I've had, and it's the opposite, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. I have days where I'm like, I'm not expecting much, and it was everything you could imagine. Do you have, when if you look at a forecast, if you're going to go turkey hunting this week and you're looking at a 10-day forecast, do you look for things when you're turkey hunting, or do you just base it on, these are the days I can hunt and I'm going to run with it?
So if I'm off, I'm going to go. But with that being said, I'm not going to be as excited in certain forecasts versus others, right? I'm going to be way more excited. It's going to be a lot easier to wake up if the forecast looks like something that I'm more interested in. I'll give you an example. My favorite forecast would be like a low in the 40s, a high in the 60s. Barometric pressure around 30.02 to 30.05. That's like what the biologists say. And I got a good buddy. He's the state biologist for the state of Alabama. And he does a lot of turkey research. And he tells me 30.02 is the perfect barometric pressure for turkeys. Random fun fact, it's also the perfect barometric pressure for eastern whippoorwills to sing. I don't know if y'all have a lot of whippoorwills in Pennsylvania, but they sing like crazy around that barometric pressure. So that's always been like an indicator to me in the turkey woods when I hear the whippoorwills singing before first light. Like, oh, it's gonna be a good day. The whippoorwills are singing. Longbeards are going to gobble their heads off. Low wind, obviously. Every turkey hunter wants a low wind day. Anything sub 10 miles an hour is good. And the clearer the sky, the better. Granted, if it's blowing 26 out of the northeast, the barometric pressure at 27, I'm still going to go hunt because I'm off, you know? I'm going to hunt. It's going to suck. Now, the rain, you mentioned the rain. Rain can be great if you're in an area, especially with agriculture. Turkeys are going to seek an open area during a rainy forecast because they can see. They can't hear, you know, just like you and I walking through the woods on a rainy day. You can't hear jack, you know. You're sitting in the tree stand deer hunting, for example. you can't hear a deer walking up. On a rainy day, you've got your head on a swivel. It's nice for access because the hardwood leaves are damp and stuff, and you can walk in the woods quiet. Your sticks don't make as much noise biting into the bark on a tree and stuff like that. But once you get set up, and I don't know about you, but I hunt with my ears a lot. I'm not the best at, like, just scanning for 7 hours straight. So a lot of times I'll, you know, plan on my phone or whatever, and I'll hunt with my ears. Like, I hear a deer coming in. On a damp day, or even a day that's actively raining, you can't hear nearly as well. Well, a turkey's the same way, I assume. You know, they're in the woods, and they've got rain hitting them in the side of the head. They can't hear danger and predators and other, you know, turkey hunters and stuff coming to get after them in the woods. And I assume that's why they seek open areas during the rain. It's completely an assumption, but all I know is on rainy days, you will absolutely, if you're hunting in an area with a lot of ag land, see turkeys out in fields during the rainstorm. Maybe not during a torrential downpour, but post-rain, definitely. Like, just post-rain, absolutely you're going to see turkeys in a field. And during a light rain, you're going to see turkeys in a field. If you're hunting a public land, like big woods, mountainous setting or something like that, I guess it could be transferable to, like, a big hardwood bottom. I've never had any luck like that. Hunting dense woods in the rain is just downright tough. They don't gobble much. It just kind of sucks. But if you're in an agricultural setting, a rainy day can be a great day. You can put your rain gear on and grin and bear it and just go sit on the edge of a field. You're going to see turkeys, man. You can go hunt that open area. But yeah, back to the main point. That's definitely the most ideal forecast I'll look for. It's like barometric pressure around 30, bluebird skies, low wind. In my experience, I always hear way more gobbling on those sets of conditions than I do like the alternative.
Talk a little bit more about the barometric pressure. That's something that I don't look at, but I've heard other better turkey hunters talk about that. And I can recall a neighbor down the road years ago, God rest his soul, he loved turkey hunting. He passed away during COVID, but he shared a couple different tidbits of his philosophy with turkeys. And one thing he shared with me was that when the barometer was fluctuating a lot, that created a lot of inconsistencies. He said, but when you had, I believe the way he described it was 24 hours of consistency in the barometer, he felt that consistency equated to turkeys talking more. Now, you just brought up a specific barometer pressure. I mean, can you enlighten me more on your philosophy and maybe other information that you can share about barometer and from your opinion or experiences or other resources?
Man, I'll be honest with you. I'm not nearly as well versed at it as some would be to talk on the topic, but I know that for a fact, like in my experience, that 30.02 to 30.05 and maybe some change, I just hear more birds gobble. I don't know what the biological reason is behind it. I don't know if it's like a boost in testosterone. I have no idea what the reasoning is behind it. I just know that at a certain point in time, I started paying attention to it a lot. Similar to how some really serious whitetail hunters will pay attention to like moon phase and wind direction and stuff like that. And like when they see more rut activity in November, oh, if the moon is, or it's a red moon, you're going to see whatever, more cruising, whatever the case may be. I'm not well versed on the moon, so I'm not going to try to pretend I am. But I know that it's something I've always paid attention to. Like I'll look at the barometric pressure. And then I'll make a mental note. Sometimes I'll even make a pencil note of like what I heard that day. And around that 30.02, that's like the magic number in my head. I don't know if that's accurate, but in my head, in my experience, that's always been the number where I happen to hear more gobble. And really this season, man, I was looking at an infograph the other day. In the whole Eastern board, it's been one of the windiest springs we've had in 30 years. I don't know if you've experienced the same.
100% we have. And the reason I can remember that is because, you know, in the world of agriculture that I work in, it's been so difficult to get farm work done that requires low wind speeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it's been brutal. Brutal. And you just kind of count on, like, if you take off opening week, for example, turkey hunting, you're going to have at least two bluebird days, you know. This year in Virginia and Georgia, as a matter of fact, you couldn't buy a day that was sub 15 miles an hour. Some days north of 20. It was just brutal. And, yeah, I mean, it's just hard to hear turkeys gobble in the wind. Do they gobble less in the wind? I don't know. You know, I wish I could tell you that answer. I can't freaking hear them because the wind's against my ears, you know, and I can't hear them as well. All I know is I hunted the same farm 3 days in a row this year to give you a good piece of example. And this farm, this specific farm, is it's very, very open. It's a gigantic field, small parcel. I say small parcel of timber. It's about 100 acres. Mostly pines, drops down into a drain, and there's a hardwood bowl inside that drain. Turkeys typically like to roost in there. Historically, I've been hunting this lease for 8 years. Historically, toms like to roost in that hardwood drain or up near the edge of the field. Behind us, on the neighbor's properties, there's a gigantic fresh clear cut that borders another huge field. And then adjacent to us, if I'm sitting on our farm looking at our timber, off my left shoulder, there's another small parcel of timber with a large field. They have hardwood drains that run in there, and there'll be a couple turkeys roosted in there. Every year, my buddy and I ride around early season on this lease, and we'll just kind of take inventory of turkeys. What we can hear from the truck, from the road, from standing in the field, what we can glass, and stuff like that. And usually, we'll, in that specific farm, we'll lock about 7 or 8 turkeys that'll gobble in that area. That's like the rough estimate. Opening day this year, I heard 1. And I was like, man, that's... But opening day was terrible conditions. Barometric pressure low, 28s. It was like a north wind. It was extremely overcasty, blowing in the 20s. Not what you'd look for as a turkey hunter. 2 days later, same farm, same exact spot. Listening first thing in the morning, barometric pressure around 30.04. Wind speeds 4 to 5. Bluebird skies, and I heard 8 turkeys sitting in the same spot. What do you make of that? You know what I mean? Like, it's just... And 3 of them were behind me off that clear cut. 2 of them were behind me on the neighbor's other side, and 2 of them were on our property. And I'm just like, man, I knew of 1 turkey that existed when I hunted here 2 days ago. And now I know of 8. It's 7, been, whatever I said.
And you talk about our opening week. You know, I just kind of reiterate what I've seen. The week leading into season, I saw birds everywhere. I heard birds constantly when I was scouting or whether I was working, and it was places I couldn't hunt, but you know, I'm out in these fields working and I'd hear birds in the general area. The day before our season was a bluebird sunny day, gorgeous out. I found 7 or 8 birds in 4 different spots on a piece of public. I was jacked up to hunt it. But our opening day, we had a pretty good front coming through, and it started raining around 9 o'clock, and it was intermittent off, on and off. I ended up hearing 2 birds, and it was not anything I could work. The first 3 days during the week were poor. It was rainy. It was foggy. It was, I guess, low pressure. And then all of a sudden the light switch flipped. Thursday was a beautiful, crisp morning. It kind of fit the script of what you just described. And myself and many of my friends had awesome turkey hunts that Thursday morning. Friday was a miserable, rainy day. I didn't go hunting. This morning I went out, and it was I thought it was going to be exactly like Thursday. The front had passed. It was bluebird, sunny, gorgeous day. I couldn't buy a turkey. I heard 2 shot gobbles and nothing was responsive. And I just look at that and I just scratch my head. And I think there's smarter turkey hunters that read into that better. I don't read into it well, but it's just so crazy how changes in fluctuation just make turkeys behave different. And I think at the end of the day, it's you just got to wait them out. I mean, if you got a month to do it, stick with it and don't quit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely 100% agree with you on the don't quit thing. I mean, the thing is, if you hunt for 30 days, chances are one of those days is going to be awesome if you just stick with it, you know. And you might, it's like I said, it's really easy with turkey hunting to give up hope and be like, man, these birds are pressured, the conditions suck, I haven't been hearing nothing on this farm. But you don't know unless you go. And if you go to a farm one day, there might all of a sudden be 3 new longbeards. Much like whitetails in the rut, they move a lot as the breeding cycle progresses, right? So, like, they will start to move farms. If they're, like, say, they've been roosting in this neighbor's farm behind your piece, there's been 2 longbeards that have been over there the whole season. They gobble every morning, they fly down into the neighbor's woods, and you can't do anything with them. They gobble their brains out, and you can't do nothing with them. And there's nothing gobbling on your farm. Well, maybe the 3rd week of season, all the hens on that farm have done gone to nest. And then all of a sudden, they've shot over to your farm, and they're roosted on your side. And they fly down, and they're lonely, and they're fired up, and then boom, that's your day, you know? and you're just not going to know unless you're there. I think a lot of guys that turkey hunt aren't really hardcore serious turkey hunters. They just turkey hunt because it's an open season and they want to go be in the woods, you know. So they might go 3-4 times, get frustrated, and then throw in the hat. And they might get lucky, kill one or two, you know, but they might not. And if you don't keep going, you're not going to know. You're not going to get the full picture of what happens. In my opinion, I think there's three things that kind of influence turkey behavior. And then one's going to be weather. And then the other one's going to be the phase that they're at in the breeding cycle. And those are going to be like the main two, right? Weather sometimes can be just influencing how well we can hear them. For example, rain, wind, etc. And then the phase that they're at in the breeding cycle. And then the main one is pressure. Pressure, I feel like, in my opinion, I wanted to say this earlier when we were contrasting deer hunting and turkey hunting, but it slipped my mind. I feel like, personally, hunting pressure affects turkey behavior greater than it affects deer pressure.
Interesting.
Or deer behavior, in my opinion. I just think they can get shut down so much faster. Maybe it's just because of the way we hunt them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, most turkey hunters want to run a gun. They want to call to a turkey, hear a turkey respond, and then have them run to the gun barrel, you know. Imagine if we based our deer hunting experience off of how many mature bucks came to our rattling sequence. You know, like, oh, I went and got in the tree today and I rattled and no bucks came in. Terrible day of deer hunting. Well, that would just, we'd have a terrible deer season. Because how many bucks do you rattle in a season? You know what I mean?
Right.
5 or 6, maybe? You know, if you hunt the whole month of November.
And some people don't even rattle.
Right, yeah. People just get in a tree, which is fine. That's an excellent way to kill deer. You know, if you're just in the right spot, that's a fantastic way to kill deer. If you've done your homework and know where they're going to be or whatever, trail camera data, glass, and whatever you've done to figure out where they're going to be. Imagine if you hunted turkeys like deer and then took that and used that experience to describe how the turkey's behavior is. But we don't. We base it all off of how well they're gobbling and how responsive they are to our calling, you know. And being that everybody kind of hunts them the same, I think that pressure affects them much, much quicker.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody's going to access similar. Everybody's going to call similar. Everybody's going to kind of do the same things, with the exception of, like, your guys that are diehard turkey hunters that understand how to make the shift with the hunting pressure. Like, okay, the hunting pressure has been great. When I hear this turkey gobble, he only gobbles twice on the ground every day. And it's always in that hardwood bowl that's 200 yards inside that pond stand. And instead of sitting out in the field and and waiting for him to answer, you decide one morning, well, I'm going to slip in there in the dark. I'm going to get where he has been the last 2 days, and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to call so soft. Because the hens are the same way, man. Their vocalizations decrease as the hunting pressure increases as well. I mean, open in morning, you'll hear hens cutting and yelping and carrying on, walking through open fields and going ape crap, you know. But 2 weeks into the season, you're not hearing much of that at all. You kind of got to match the hatch a little bit, you know. You got to slip in there and like, okay, well, the turkeys are quiet. I need to hunt quiet. But I don't think a lot of people are willing to make that adjustment. And it's probably your less diehard turkey hunters, the guys that are more just hunting because turkey season is open. And they think, well, the turkeys just aren't doing what they're supposed to do. But like I said, imagine if we had that same attitude towards deer. Like, oh, I blew a grunt tube today and no bucks came in, so they just must be done rutting. You know, like, that's not true.
I think that's a great great way to compare it, a great way to think about it. You were talking a little bit about getting burned out, you know, guys hunting hard and not sticking with it and wanting to quit. You're human, I'm human. You know, you hunt a lot throughout turkey season. You just kind of laid out a foundation of how many days you like to hunt and vacations and stuff. And I know at some point in the season, it weighs on you. It's a grind. It can get tough. And you talk about sticking with it. How do you combat the grind? How do you combat that desire to just like want to think the negative about the way the turkey season is going and stick with it in a positive attitude?
Man, my approach is pretty impatient. I'll tell you what I do. and I kind of do something similar with deer season. Like I said, the turkey behavior is going to decrease greatly after that opening week. The turkey behavior that we look for, anyway, as turkey hunters, which is them run into our mouth call, right? Or box call or whatever you're setting decoys out in the field. Whatever. Whatever way you're approaching turkey hunting, that is going to decrease after opening week. I like to hunt opening week. It's that simple. That's why I hunt 5, 6, 7 states a year. I'm gonna chase the openers, and that's why I go down to Alabama in March when they open, and then I come to Georgia. As soon as they stop acting right in Alabama, I move to Georgia. Once they stop acting right in Georgia, I'll move to North Carolina. Once Virginia opens, I'm in Virginia. And then once Virginia starts to peter out, I'll go northeast and I'll go hunt New York or Pennsylvania or something like that. My stance on it is like this. I'm a diehard turkey hunter. I love turkey hunting to death. I like hunting them when they're hot though. I only get one chance to do this a year. I want it to be really, really fun. And like my stance on it has always been, when I'm not having fun, it's time to leave and go somewhere else where the turkeys are acting right and I can have a lot more fun. And I've slammed left of state. I did it in Georgia this year. We hunted Georgia this year. We killed a turkey opening day. My buddy and I always flip-flop who's on the gun opening day. He was on the gun opening day this year. I had it last year. I killed a turkey there opening day last year. This year opening day, he killed a turkey. I filmed it. It was awesome. The second day, we had a monsoon roll in. I caught a hotel. I mean, I'm talking a monsoon. Like 40-mile-an-hour winds, falling trees, lightning. Raining cats and dogs, terrible, like, unhuntable conditions, you know. So I went into town and I grabbed a hotel for 2 days and I waited it out. And on the third day, I went and hunted. So this is, or fourth day, rather, in Georgia. So this would be my second actual day of hunting in Georgia this year. And I had taken 7 days off to hunt Georgia. On my second actual day of in-the-woods hunting, it was, again, terrible conditions. I covered 11 miles and I didn't hear a turkey gobble. And I said, well, I'm not having fun, so I'm going to leave. And I left and went somewhere else. So that's personally how I deal with it. A lot of guys will tough it out, and you can. You can absolutely tough it out and change your strategy and adjust for the turkeys. And when I used to hunt strictly Virginia, when I first got into turkey hunting, that's what I would do. But now, I'm just going to leave and go somewhere where they're acting right. And I'm fortunate that I can take a large sum of vacation off. I can be off most of the turkey season in the southeast and then a small portion of the northeast, so I can kind of move with the turkeys and kind of move into, capture those different opening days. But I like hunting opening week, man. That's what I do. I just go somewhere that just opened.
Absolutely. And opening week is always going to be the week that has, the least amount of pressure has been induced upon those turkeys the opening week, and it gets increasingly worse. But if you can capitalize before it gets too ugly, you're in the money. I do think there's something to be said, and I've seen this in Pennsylvania, where opening week, you know, you can have that exact same setup there that you just described. Week two can be slow, and I've experienced week two of turkey season for many years to be very inconsistent. Sometimes I'll have great turkey behavior and I've killed turkeys the second week, but I think about the second week more and more as being a little bit tougher. But you know, I've talked to a lot of other good turkey hunters, and I just chatted with one here a few days ago that when he lived in Pennsylvania, his favorite week to take off in Pennsylvania was the third week. And his philosophy was, by week three, there's differences in the breeding season and the hunting pressure has dwindled. Week two, guys are starting to give up. They're falling off of by the wayside. And, you know, he can go out week three and have the woods to himself for the most part and really get into turkeys. And he used to kill two birds on a very regular basis during that week. So there is an interesting dynamic. You have to think about it. But at the end of the day, you're not going to kill them if you quit. And I think that's the biggest thing I've learned with turkeys is if you want it bad enough, stick with it.
Yeah, man, absolutely. The thing is, with deer season, we start most states, there's some southern states that start really early. Generally speaking, we start in September or October in most states, right? So, and in September, October, early season, you're hunting what? You're hunting a food source, right? Typically.
Yep.
You've got a lot of breeding activity going on. So you're hunting a food source. And then as we progress into the pre-rut, we start to change where we're hunting scrape lines. We're hunting closer to thickets and stuff like that. And then as we change from there, it goes into the rut and we're hunting funnels and stuff like that. And then late season, the deer are moving good because it's cold and we move back to food sources, and we kind of follow that pattern through deer season. Well, a lot of guys don't hunt like that for turkeys. It's a lot easier to stay in the game long term for deer season. That goes back to the point I was making in the beginning of the show. It's a lot easier to want to stay in the game long term for deer season. Also because the season's just much longer, you know, so you can take big breaks and then get re-fired up and get back into it. Most turkey hunters are gonna quit after the second week. Most like non-die-hard turkey hunters. They're gonna hunt the first week when it's on fire, and then they're still gonna be excited the second week, and they're gonna go again and it's gonna suck. And then they're like, well, I'm done. And they just kinda check out. And then once it gets hot, and the green up's super thick, and it's a high of 85 every day, and the ticks are terrible, and the bugs are terrible, and the turkeys aren't gobbling as much, they're just not gonna go. There's two times during the season, if you look at like historical data for most of the Eastern board, if you look up the harvest data and the harvest reporting for when turkeys are harvested, it's the first week and the last week, man. Don't sleep on that last week. That last week can be something special. There's a lot of times people just have not been in the woods. Does it suck? Yeah, it sucks, dude. It's like 90 degrees sometimes if you're in the southeast. I don't know about where you're at. It's probably upper 70s, 80s at least. You know?
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes it is pushing 90.
It's extremely green. You know, so it's hard to see. It's hard to hear turkeys gobble. I mean, you're lucky if you hear one gobble 100 yards away on the ground, especially if you're dealing with some terrain, you know. It can be really tricky to hear them gobble on the ground, and it just gets tougher. But, dude, if you can find a lonely turkey on May 15th, he's good as dead, dude. Like, he answers your call one time, you better sit down. He's going to come. Like, chances are if he gobbles, like, post 8 a.m. and he's alone, he will come 500 yards to you. Like, that is a turkey that is ready to die, man. Where the turkey on April 10th that everybody loves to hunt, or in y'all's case, May 1st, May 2nd, whatever, that, you know, you just fuck, yep, yep, pow, pow, and he double gobbles at it, and you're all excited. He might have seven hens with him. His testosterone's so high and the hunting pressure's so low that he's still so fired up, he's gobbling at everything in the woods. A pileated woodpecker flies over his head and gobbles. You know what I mean? But that last week, man, the hunting pressure has decreased a ton. There's not a lot of people turkey hunting that last week of turkey season. Everybody hunts the first week. You know what I mean? The first week's awesome. But I just think if we approach turkey season a little bit more like how we approach deer season with respect to the breeding cycle, you know, you don't go out there on October 8th and expect a buck to come sprinting through an open field at 9 a.m. chasing three does. If you don't see deer on October 8th, you're like, well, yeah, that's about right. You know what I mean? But we don't approach turkey season the same way. It's just because we only hunt the breeding season. We don't hunt 2 months before the breeding season and then a month after. We just hunt that small window. And so we just expect them to act right. But that hunting pressure, I think, because it's a smaller window, just affects them much more greatly.
So, I know you said you like to chase opening days for the reasons that we stated, but if you're in your home state and you still got a tag in your pocket and you don't fill it opening week and you're getting into the second half portion of your turkey season, do you approach how you hunt the second half of turkey season differently than you do the first week?
That's a good question. And the reason I don't have a right off the bat answer is mostly because I'm not in my state come that time. Okay. But I have in the past. And in the past, yeah, absolutely, you have to make an adjustment. I mean, opening day, I will have already located several turkeys and kind of know where their strut zones are. I'm fortunate that the lease that I hunt in Virginia, and I hunt both public and private in Virginia, but the lease that I hunt specifically in Virginia, I'll be able to locate turkeys. I'll know where their strut zone is, what field they like to use, what piece of timber they typically roost in. And that opening week, you can hunt them without calling if you're just in the right spot. You can use the same tactics in May. For example, May is late season for us in Virginia. Mm-hmm. You can use the same tactics in May, but it's going to be way more boring, because you're not going to hear as much gobbling activity. But really, the only major difference that I see in the tactics I use, if I'm still hunting in Virginia in May, is I'm calling much, much, much softer. Like, I mean, I'll just bubble clucks, whines, really soft yelps, scratching the leaves. And when I sit down on a turkey, it's a much longer sit down. Where opening week, if I sit down on a turkey, he's got 25 minutes, and if he doesn't show up, I'm going to find another one, because I know there's one that's fired up and ready to go. But in May, I'm willing to sit much, much, much longer.
So this is a curiosity thing. So Pennsylvania, you know, the first half of our season, we must be out of the woods by 1 o'clock. Quitting time is 12. You have till 1 to get out. Then the second half of the season, we can hunt all day. I don't have a lot of all-day turkey hunting experience. I do, I've said this time and time again, I am not a good turkey hunter in the first part of the morning off the roost. I have not had a lot of success. And it's strange because I know so many people that do. I just, for some reason, haven't been overly successful. And I lean more towards 9 to 12 o'clock. I've been very, very successful in that time frame turkey hunting. You get to hunt multiple states with different regulations and different, different timelines, and some of those states are all day. So the states that you're able to hunt all day, how does that change in those afternoon, evening hunts for you when you compare it to, you know, this upper northeast where we can hunt till noon?
Yeah, so the first half of the season in Virginia, we can hunt till noon. That's interesting. You guys have to be out of the woods by one. Does that mean you're not allowed to go back in the evening and like roost turkeys?
Oh, you absolutely can. But what it means is like if you're actively hunting, like today I was on a ridge, I had my shotgun, I was there till 12, and then you're supposed to be out of the woods from hunting by 1 o'clock. Now, you can go back to your truck, put your shotgun in your truck, and then go right back out. If you really wanted to scout from 1 o'clock until dark, you could do that. But you're not actively hunting in that sense.
Okay, that was a curiosity question. But anyway, in Virginia, the first half of the season, we can hunt till noon. After that, you got to unload your gun. That's basically just the law. You got to unload your gun. You don't have to start towards the truck, but your gun needs to be unloaded. The second half of the season, we can hunt till dark. And I've killed one turkey hunting like that. Granted, part of that is because I'm usually not in Virginia the second half of the season. I'm usually elsewhere. You could absolutely kill some turkeys in that later part. To answer your question, that mid-afternoon, it's just rough, dude. Like 2, 3 p.m., 4 p.m., I think most turkeys are just kind of loafing about. You know, they're not doing a whole lot. They've had a very active morning, and they're probably just kind of kicking back, putting their feet up. You know what I mean? But around 5 p.m., there's a switch that flips, and they're going to be out in their strut zones. If you're in an agricultural setting, they're going to be in fields. If you're in a big woods setting, they're going to be gobbling somewhere, man. Like around 5 p.m., there's a switch that flips. I don't know what really is going through a Tom's head at that time. I don't know if they're trying to locate hens before they go to roost that they want to roost near to like kind of get ready for the next day. I wish I could give you a better answer on why, but I just know that at about 5 p.m., there's absolutely a switch that flips, and I will start seeing a lot more turkeys, especially in an open ground setting. I mean, trail camera data will tell you the same thing. If you run trail cameras during turkey season to pique your curiosity, like, and also, a little hot tip, if you're going to run a trail camera in a field for a turkey, put it in the lowest bottom corner, real similar to like how you put a trail camera in early season to catch deer on the creek. You know, that's where the turkeys are going to want to strut typically because they can feel safe there, right? They can be seen by their hens, but they can feel safe. Anyway, you check those areas around 5:30 to 6 p.m. and you're going to locate a lot of toms. I've killed a lot of toms like that. I killed a tom, I think it was 3, maybe 4 years ago. It was in Virginia, late season. I was hunting a buddy's lease and he had these two longbeards that were on this specific lease that we hunted the first morning. He knew they were there. We went in there, we set up. The property was a big field. It was like a 175 acre, very long field, kind of rectangular shape. And we went to the back side of it and the neighbors owned a big swamp. And the turkeys were roosting in the edge of the swamp, using the field to strut. And then they would spend most of their day in the swamp. They would fly down, first light, they would be in this field. And then they'd be in the swamp all day. And then at last light, they'd be back in the field. And they would roost in the swamp again. We hunted them the first day. We sat on the edge of the field. They gobbled. They were 20 yards into the swamp, just off the edge of the field. They flew down to the field, didn't cooperate, made their way into the swamp. Can't go in there because it's the neighbor's property. So we went around, run and gun all day, tried to locate a different one. Never did. Came back about 5:15 p.m. And we saw both of them strutting in the back corner of the field. Right by the edge of the swamp where they were roosted that morning. Tried to put a move on them and it didn't work. So the next day we tried them again, first light. Long story short, it didn't work out. So that evening, we went and got in between where they were roosted and faced the field. Didn't know where they were. They could have been in the swamp. I have no idea where they are at this point. We've been gone all day running and gunning. So we go back to where the birds had roosted 2 days in a row, and we sat there. Long story short, we sat there till almost dark. It felt like a deer hunt, man. It's strange. And last light, there's a little deer blind on the edge of this field. Well, it's a big deer blind, really. And it was like almost last light, we're still sitting out here turkey hunting. It feels kind of silly. And I'm like, let me just climb this deer blind where I can glass this field a bit. And I get about 3 steps up and I see a redhead. So I kind of duck down, throw my binos up. Sure enough, there's a longbeard 120 or so yards away headed towards the swamp. So we come down, sit back down next to my buddy. I say, hey, there's a longbeard. He's headed towards us right out here. Soft called, pow, he gobbled. I'm like, cool. Didn't call again. Got right. And about 5 seconds later, we see two fans crest the hill, coming over about 80 yards uphill from us, coming down towards the swamp. And then we doubled up on those turkeys right there at last light. And, 6:45 p.m., like late, you know. And actually, when my buddy shot at his, he actually missed. I said doubled up. I left that part out of the story. He missed. I killed mine. But
yeah, throw him under the bus. Why don't you?
Yeah. It's just kind of lucky. But anyway, he missed his. His turkey was actually down off our left shoulder, looking up at the tree, looking for a limb to roost on when he shot at his turkey. Mine was still strutting in the field, but it was one of those where we're trying to decide, are we going to do 3-2-1? 3-2 shoot, you know what I mean? And last second, he was like, I gotta shoot, because his turkey's literally got his head up, swiveling, looking left and right, looking for a limb to fly up on. I didn't have a shot on mine yet, because he had about 3 hens with him, and they were really close to him. I didn't want to kill a couple hens with my turkey, obviously. He's like, I gotta shoot. So I said, okay, shoot. He missed. And then my turkey kind of ran towards his turkey, and then I dusted mine, because then he was in the open. But anyway, my whole point is, yeah, that late day turkey hunt like that, when you can hunt all day, man, if you can figure out where a turkey's been roosting, and oftentimes, man, if pressure doesn't change the case, turkeys will roost in the same location. Maybe not the same exact tree, exact limb, but they're going to roost in the same location day after day unless they have a reason to leave there. The hens leave, or hunting pressure, one or the other, pushes them out of there, they're going to keep using that location. Similar to like how a buck will use the same bedding area until he gets pushed out, you know? And if you can go be amongst that roost area during those late hours of the day when he's on his way back, you're already where he wants to be, you still got an hour of daylight left or so, and you soft call to that turkey, it can be extremely fruitful.
I like it. Well, hey, we're getting close to the point where we ought to wrap this up. And before we do, I was wondering, do you have any turkey stories from this season that you'd like to share with us before we close this one out?
Sure. Yeah, I'll tell you my favorite turkey hunt from this year. This year I've hunted, I didn't do much this year, really. I did Georgia, West Virginia, and then I've hunted here in Virginia. Next week I'm heading to New York. Last year I was there for opening day. My vacation just didn't really fall that way this year, so I'm going to end up there in the second week of the season. It'll be my first time doing that, so I'm interested to see kind of what we were talking about, what the behavior is going to be like. Is it going to be better or worse? I don't know. I'll tell you when I get back, but I'm interested to find out. But probably my favorite from this year was actually in Virginia on some public land. And the private land for me this year was rough. It was just rough. We had a tough season. I don't know if it was just because, I mean, definitely in part due to the wind forecast, but it has just been a strange year. Like, areas where I typically see turkeys, can typically strike turkeys, just haven't had nearly as much success in the past as I have this year. So I jumped to some public land during the second week. And I went the night before the first Saturday of the second week and into this public ground to scout. This specific piece of public ground, it's separated into units, which is kind of cool. And you check into a specific unit on the app, and that is like the border of where you're allowed to hunt, which keeps the hunting pressure kind of divided. And you can actually view on an app how many people are in each unit, and they have a maximum capacity, which during turkey season is small. It's usually like up to 4 people per 1,500 acres or so.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, it's pretty neat. It's about 50,000 acres total, the piece of public land. So you got enough room to move around. And the entire northern half of the public land had been closed for the whole season so far. up until the Thursday of the second week. So I went in there on Saturday. It had only been open for 2 days. And that's like 25,000 acres, the entire northern half, that had only been open for 2 days. So I'm like, well, shoot, those turkeys ought to be acting right. It's almost like walking in opening weekend, you know? And so I slipped in there Friday evening, just driving the roads, kind of walking around. We figured we'd try to roost one. And pulled past, they've got a lot of food plots on this public ground, small little clover plots and stuff. A lot of them just off the roads. And I saw a longbeard in a food plot, I don't know, 150 yards off the road by himself, 6:35 p.m. That's a great indicator that he's probably going to roost right there close to that area. If you see a turkey, if you see a turkey out in a food plot or a field or on the edge of some woods or whatever, and it's within an hour till last light, you can probably bet a paycheck he's going to roost somewhere close to that area. And if you know anything about turkey habitat, pull up Onyx or whatever e-scouting app you use and find the closest water to that area, and you can probably bet he's going to roost right there if there's a creek drain or something to that effect. So there was a creek drain about 200 yards behind that food plot. I had my buddy with me. He had never turkey hunted before. It was his first year turkey hunting. And I said, hey, we'll go stand in that food plot. The food plot was actually the high point anyway, and it dropped down into a creek bottom behind it. It had two drains that ran parallel to it off the right and left shoulder of the backside of the food plot. I said, okay, we'll go stand at the back side of that food plot in the dark, get just in the woods so we can hide in case he's roosted on the edge of that thing. But he's likely going to be in that drainway behind it. That's what I assumed anyway. And it was terrible wind that day, man. Like 26 mile an hour. It was overcasty, crappy pressure. Just a bad turkey hunting day, which you would think would be a bad turkey hunting day anyway from a forecast standpoint. We stood there. It was about 6:14, 6:15. I hadn't heard anything. And I owl hooted. Nothing. Owl hooted a little louder. Nothing. I caterwauled on the owl tube, and a turkey gobbles off my right shoulder. So windy, I really can't tell where it came from, but it's off my right shoulder. And I had my buddy standing on the opposite side of the food plot off my left shoulder, like 100 yards. So I call him. I'm like, hey, did you hear him? He's like, no. The wind's terrible. I said, okay, well, come over here. He's on this side. I said, okay. So he runs over to me. I said, before we step in the woods, let me owl hoot again. I think he's in this drain behind the food plot. I'm not 100% sure. So, he gobbles, and this sucker is sub 100 yards, just off the side of the food plot. He's not even all the way in the drain. He's on the edge of it, basically up in the woods on the side of the food plot with us. And I'm like, well, dadgum, buddy, he's right here. Like, drop to your knees, and we're going to crawl. And I looked, and there's like two scraggly white oaks and a gigantic mature pine that kind of made a little triangle about 20 yards in the woods just off of this food plot with a bunch of little saplings grown up around it, like just the perfect little natural blind, you know. And I said, we'll crawl in there and we'll tuck against that big pine. So we get down on our knees and we crawl up. We get set up, and I'm nervous, like, man, he may have seen us setting up. Like, he sounded really, really close. And especially with this wind, it's hard to judge his distance, you know. So I, like, carefully slipped my owl hooter back out of my vest and put it to my mouth and just real soft. Pow! And I said, okay, we're good. We got in clean. And I'm coaching him through, you know, he's never turkey hunted. So I'm telling him, like, how to set his knees and where to set his gun and this, that, and the third. And we sit there and the turkey gobbles and gobbles and gobbles, and he's having a great time. It's his first, well, it's his second day turkey hunting. First day was just terrible. Didn't hear a turkey, walk 12 miles, try to strike one. Just terrible. I thought he was never going to turkey hunt again. And then we had this day, and I'm like, all right, cool. Now he's hooked. But anyway, so we're sitting there, and the turkey's gobbling and gobbling. And I get to looking, and I'm like, I can see a turkey. He hadn't gobbled in a little while, but I'm looking at it. I'm like, I'm looking at a turkey 100%. I don't know if it's the long beard, but 100% I'm looking at a turkey in a tree about 75 yards from us. It might be a hen. And then right as I had that thought, the turkey gobbled, and I watched his whole body flex. And I'm like, oh, that's the long beard. I'm looking at him, man. He's 75 yards from us on the limb. And it's not often in the eastern states you get close to one like that on the limb. It's tough to do, you know?
Very.
And just sheer luck, just stumbled into that one, and I'm sitting there, and I'm watching him, and he's gobbling in the tree, and I'm like, well, shoot, he's right here. I hadn't called to him yet, but he's facing away from us, and he's gobbling down into that creek bottom behind the food plot the entire time. I'm assuming he's trying to pull hens out of that food plot to the base of his tree so he can fly down with those hens. And so I'm nervous he's going to fly down into that creek. It's going to be really hard to hear him once he gets down there because it's 200 foot below us. And with that wind, it's going to be really hard to catch back up to him. So I made the decision of, hey, we're going to call to him on the limb, see if we can't coax him to fly this way. So I popped a mouth call in, and I just real soft, just pop, 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 pop. And when I did that, he turned towards us and gobbled right at us. And I said, okay, he heard it. And I waited 5 minutes. He hadn't gobbled in that 5 minutes. And I did it one more time. And when I did that, he jumped limbs, did a 180, spun in the tree, and is now facing us. And he went into strut in the tree and just stopped gobbling. And he would just go out of strut, go into strut, go out of strut, go into strut, just staring at us. And I'm talking to my buddy like, dude, you cannot move. Like, he can see the world up there, and he is 70 yards from us staring into this pond that we're sitting on, you know? And he went in and out of strut for 25 minutes, dude. It was painstaking. Painstaking. Just up on that limb. He's just going in and out of strut. And then finally, he pitches down. I watch him pitch down kind of towards that bottom, but not like down into it. Just a little bit away from us. And I called to him real aggressive while he was flying. And he hits the ground, and I hear him drum. Like immediately, as soon as his feet hit the ground, I hear him drum. And my buddy's like, he's coming, he's coming. And I said, how far is he? He said, 50. I'm like, oh, perfect. And I'm going to let my buddy shoot him because he's never killed a turkey before. So he's got a lane picked out. And I kind of talked him through how to do that and stuff. I'm like, hey, you can't move the gun a whole lot when they're on the ground. Kind of got to pick a lane, you know. You can swing on them last second, but that's about it. And he starts coming up. And I've got a shooting lane right in front of me. I see his head bob into the shooting lane. And I put the red dot on his neck. And I said, Ken, can you shoot him right there? And he said, no. And then he took another 2 steps forward. I still got the red dot on his neck. He's probably about 30 yards at this point. I said, Ken, can you shoot him right there? He said, no. And about that time, the gobbler set his wings, picked his head up, went out of strut, and started scanning. Like, you know, that real nervous, I'm getting ready to leave look. I said, can you shoot him right there? He said, no. I said, sorry. and shot him right there. And that was a freaking cool hunt, man. I think it was 6:59 a.m. or so when I killed him. And my buddy's first, like, real turkey hunt where he got to see him do the thing, you know. And it was a really awesome experience and just, you know, great memory to have with my buddy. And that's probably my favorite story from this year, man. It was a cool morning.
Good deal. Well, hopefully there's more to come, especially when you get into New York. So best of luck to you. And hey, before we let you go, just make sure you plug your podcast a little bit before we let you go here.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. You can find us Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman Podcast. We're on podcast, Spotify, a couple other platforms and stuff like that. On Instagram, it's mid_Atlantic_outdoorsman. And then Facebook, Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman. We put out a weekly episode. Right now, it's primarily turkey content. We'll probably be making the shift sometime around late May, early June to some summer deer prep content and stuff like that. But yeah.
Appreciate you coming on the show, Kevin. It was a pleasure having you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, Mitchell. It was a blast talking turkeys with you. I hope I have some better stories for you here soon coming from New York.
Sounds good.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.